was my breath coming fast, hard, and loud, like I was underwater and wearing an oxygen mask connected to a heavy tank strapped on my back, and the only sound that could fit in my head was the rasping air going in and out of my lungs. I set the bat down carefully at my feet, lifted my head, and pushed the hair out of my face. I was soaked, as if I had just walked through a storm. I took another deep breath. Other sounds filtered in. Mom patting Hannah's back, Hannah trying not to cry. Dad saying, "It's okay. It's okay, Tyler. Calm down. It's okay." The red haze lifted. I licked my lips. I wiped my hands on my jeans. The open blisters burned. "I'm going to talk now," I said. My father nodded once. "Please sit down." Dad sat on the edge of his recliner. His black socks drooped around his ankles. Mom and Hannah retreated to the foot of the stairs, their eyes darting between my father and me. "Thank you," I said. I emptied my pockets and handed $480 in bills to him. "That's your money," I said. "I stole it from your closet on Saturday. I spent $20 hitting balls." Dad's face was stone. "You were in my room?" "I needed money to go to Minnesota."
"What?"
Mom whispered. "I hear it's nice there. I figured it would be a good place to start out on my own." The furnace kicked on. "Will you get me a garbage can?" I asked my sister. "The black one in the garage. And call Yoda. Tell him I'm coming back." Hannah had a puzzled look on her face, but she went upstairs. I took a deep, slow breath, waiting for her to get out of earshot. "What made you stay?" Mom asked. "Dad's gun."
"You touched my gun?"
He gripped the chair.
"Why?"
"I asked you to shut up." Mom started to cry. I couldn't look at her, because if I did, I might fall apart. And Dad would take control again, and it would be the same as before, only worse. I crouched next to the train wreck and picked up the broken engine. I didn't really want to run away. I wanted to die. I turned the engine over and over in my hands. The smokestack and wheels had snapped off, but the body was whole.
"But you didn't do it," Dad said.
I opened my mouth. I knew my voice was going to crack. I cleared my throat and waited. Dad didn't know what to do with his hands. He rubbed them once on his thighs. He crossed his arms over his chest and immediately uncrossed them. He kept his eyes on a carpet stain 6 inches to the left of me. I tried again. I had the gun in my mouth and my finger on the trigger. Mom cried silently, rocking back and forth. Dad flinched, but quickly recovered.
"What stopped you?"
I looked in the mirror and realized that I was already dead. I let you kill me, one piece at a time, starting when I was, what, 8 years old? 9? You killed yourself, and then you came after us. My eyes were leaking again. Damn. I wiped them on my sleeve.
"I never hit you."
Dad's voice shook.
"I sacrificed everything to give you a good life and a nice home. Something better than I had."
"You're a real success story, Mr. Miller. You got the big house, but nobody lives here.
Not really.
Anyway." I tossed the engine on the trash heap. "So? I'm not dead. I'm not going to be dead for a long time, I hope."
Are you blaming me for this? Dad asked. I let the question hang there, spinning. Mom was crying raw sobs, gulping for air. Dad looked smaller than he had 5 minutes earlier, like the air was being let out through a small, hidden puncture. Do I blame you? The words came out slowly. Absolutely. You loaded the gun and put it in my hand. I blame myself, too. I let you do it. I stood up and brushed off my hands. I am not going to military school, and I'm dropping most of my AP classes. What? Dad sputtered. If you don't agree, I'll drop out. If you drop out, you can't live here. His voice was higher, wobbly. More air was rushing out of him, his cheeks hollow, his skin beginning to collapse. Fine. I figure you won't pay for college either. No problems. You did it, Dad. How hard can it be? Hannah came down the stairs holding the garbage can. I took it from her and set it next to the disaster site. What's going on? She asked. Dad has to clean up his mess, I said. 76. I ate dinner at Yoda's house. His parents had cooked turkey meatloaf and beet salad and squash. It was no wonder Yoda was the way he was. I ate everything they put in front of me and drank 3 glasses of milk. Yoda and his parents talked about Case Western Reserve University and if it really was a better choice than Ohio State. Every time Mrs. Hodges asked me if I was feeling well, I did the polite thing and lied. Yoda explained what was going on when I was in the bathroom. When I came back to the table, his mother said she thought it would be best if I stayed the night. After dinner, we sat in the family room, and I watched his father watch the news for a while. Then Yoda and I went down to his room with a box of chocolate chip cookies. He turned the television to one of the music video channels and muted it. I've been thinking about your problem, he said. You make it sound like a skin condition, I said. You need another option. Besides running away or beating my father to death. Exactly. Damn. I put 2 cookies in my mouth. You could stay here, he said. Until graduation? I don't think so. Why not? My parents like you. They think you're a good influence. I snorted cookie crumbs and coughed. Wait until they get to know me better. You can't afford an apartment. I know. There's always the Army or the Navy. Funny, Yoda said. Huh, I said. I stuffed more cookies in my mouth. Yoda did the same thing. We chewed our cud, watching booties and boobs and fat rappers getting out of slick cars. You forgot to mention that I could gut it out at home, I said. I do happen to live there. And who knows? Maybe I'll get lucky and they'll arrest my dad for whatever happened in Omaha. It could happen, Yoda said. Pigs could fly out of my butt, too. You never know. I slept on his couch, under a pile of Afghans. I passed out after midnight and slept like death until just before 7, when the sound of Yoda's snoring nearly caused the walls to cave in. It took a couple minutes to figure out where I was and why I was there. Once I oriented myself, I lay back down and pulled the Afghans up under my chin. I was chilled, but it felt like I had a sunburn. The kind that hurts but itches at the same time, and you can't stop yourself from scratching even though you know it's going to hurt worse. My hands ached, my shoulders were sore, and my stomach was killing me, either from the cookies or from everything else. There was no way to get comfortable.
The sky around the edges of the curtains was pale. I got up and put my clothes on, folded the afghans, and scribbled a note that I put in the center of Yoda's keyboard. I went up the stairs holding my sneakers, staying on the edges of the treads so they wouldn't squeak. I made it out the door without a sound. 77. It was warmer than I thought it would be, and bright enough to make me squint. I left my jacket open. The street smelled strangely of tar, which made me worry that maybe I was hallucinating. I turned the corner and saw that the street crew was repairing a couple of potholes that had grown large enough to swallow tires whole. The tar smelled like summer, even though everything around me looked like fall dying into winter. I was going to walk past my house to see if it was still standing. I felt like the game-winning runner on third base, waiting for the signal to sprint home and dive headfirst, one part nervous excitement, nine parts nausea. It was finally beginning to sink in what I had done. Mom would let me take my clothes. That was a given. The computer would be harder, but if I had to get by using the computer in the library, I could do it. At the very least, I had to get my social security card and my passport, and I needed my textbooks, something to read, and my boots for when it snowed. I had been watching the sidewalk, looking for the heaves and cracks that send you landing on your face, so I didn't look up at the house until I turned in the driveway. He was sitting on the front steps. He was wearing the same clothes that he had come home in the night before, except he had sneakers on, and the beige comforter from his bed was wrapped around his shoulders. The road crew's truck beeped a high-pitched warning as it backed up. Crows roosting in the maple tree called back. "Hello," he said. I watched, listened. "I wondered if you would come back." He tugged on the comforter. "Wondered all night, in fact." "Did Mom kick you out?" I asked. "No." "She thought about it, talked about it, but she went to sleep." "I couldn't. Couldn't sleep, I mean." I watched. He shifted closer to the railing. "Will you sit next to me?" The truck stopped backing up and beeping. "Okay." I sat. The concrete was a slab of ice under my butt. "Do you want to sit on this?" he asked, offering the blanket. "I'm fine," I said. We both stared straight ahead. A television would have been nice, something we could pretend to look at. But all we had was a lawn gone dormant for the winter and a street awaiting pothole repairs. My father beat me with his belt a couple times a week for my entire childhood, he said. "That's why I swore I'd never hit you or your sister. And I never did." "No, you didn't." "But it wasn't enough." I picked at the edge of a popped blister. "No," I said quietly, "it's not." He rubbed his hand along his sandpaper beard stubble. "I'm sorry." I held my breath. I thought I was different than he was. The road crew poured hot tar and asphalt into the cracks in the road and tamped it down. "Are they going to arrest you?" I asked. "At work?" "I don't know. I have to get a lawyer." "Good idea." The crew filled the hole at the bottom of our driveway. "Your sister said you slept at Calvin's last night." I nodded. "That was nice of them." "They're nice people." "We had meatloaf," Meatloaf is nice.
Yeah. When the crew moved down the road, Dad stood up.
Are you hungry?
We both poured bowls of cereal. Dad started the coffee maker and made toast. He put butter on his toast and mine. I added raspberry jam. We sat down facing each other and ate in silence, except for the slurps of milk on the spoon and the crunch of toast. We took turns studying the backyard out the window and examining the grain of the wood in the kitchen table. When I was finished eating, I carried my bowl and plate to the dishwasher and put them in.
"Did you get enough?" he asked.
"I'm still kind of hungry," I admitted.
"I could fry some eggs," he offered.
"I can do it myself," I said. He sipped the last of his coffee.
"Do you want a couple?" I asked.
He blinked.
"Yes, that would be nice. Sunny side up."
"I know." I opened the refrigerator door and took out the egg carton. When I turned back to the stove, he was standing in front of me, his eyes wet and lost.
"I don't want you to leave us."
His throat tightened and he clenched his teeth. I put the egg carton on the counter.
"I don't know what I'm supposed to say."
He coughed once.
"I'm bad at this. I'm sorry."
He fought for control, the muscles along his jaw rippling.
"I will try to do it better. Everything. I'll try."
I put my arms around him. He pulled me close, hugging me back. He groaned, an agonized sound from deep inside, and I worried that maybe he was having a stroke. But he didn't let go. I did. I let myself break apart and lean all of my weight on him. He held me closer and patted my back like I was a little kid, whispering to me, until we both felt like we could stand on our own. He wiped the tears off my face. I did the same for him. We ate eggs, bacon, sausage, and Pop-Tarts, and polished off the orange juice. We talked a little, but not too much. I brought in the paper and handed him the business section. I read sports and the comics. Then we traded. 78. Dad didn't go down into the basement after breakfast. Progress. He fell asleep on the couch with the newspaper on his stomach. Mom and Hannah tried to make a big deal out of me being home, but I asked them to stop, so they did. Mom took over the kitchen table to go through the real estate listings and watch Dad out of the corner of her eye. Hannah went to Yoda's house. I played Tophet to empty my brain and numb everything else. Gormley grew stronger exponentially, and I scored an obscene amount of spell points and kills. By dinner time, I had finally made it. Level 1. I put the game on pause long enough to inhale a stack of grilled cheese sandwiches and tell Mom that yes, everything was fine. I just had a lot of work to do on the computer. The confrontation with the Lord of Darkness was 37 minutes of mad skills and sick mayhem. I won. I beat the game. And then a new screen, one I had never seen before, never even heard of, popped up. It gave me a choice. I could become the new Lord of Darkness myself, or I could take a gamble and be reincarnated. I chose wisely. This is Mike Chamberlain. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Twisted by Laurie Haltz Anderson.
This program was executive produced by Dan Musselman and produced and directed by Janet Stark. Text copyright 2007 by Lori Holtz Anderson. Production copyright 2007, Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.